One of my favorite musicians of the last century was a jazz pianist named Errol Garner. And one of the things that I love about him, of the many, many things I love about how he played the piano, well, actually, there's two things I really love. Well, there's about 20 things. But one is that he grunted a lot when he played. I just think that's fantastic. So deeply into the music that his whole body was playing, not just his fingers. And the other thing about him that I particularly love is his wind-up to the song that he was presenting. He generally played classics from the American Songbook, but the first few minutes of any Errol Garner tune doesn't sound like anything that it is about to come. It's like a long wind-up. He explores all kinds of things. It goes all over the place. And then finally it just settles into it. Boom. And I realized that there are a couple of different styles of giving Dharma talks. And David has told me that I have the Errol Garner style. I like a long wind-up. And there are others of us who just start right in with the koan, which is kind of the traditional way to do it. But I think it helps me get here, in a way, to acknowledge a little bit of what got me here, and also to acknowledge and really appreciate all of us being here together on a Saturday night in March. What an amazing thing. We could be at the movies. We could be dancing. We could be walking out in the mildness, finally, the mild temperature of the spring. But something has called us here to be in this room practicing together. And I think so many of us are discovering that the strength of the practice is not just about our own yearning to know the truth, but our encounters with each other. So far through this Ango period, what we're starting to call the coming and going session, there have been so many talks that have addressed topics on koans, because of course that was the topic for the Ango, but in so many different ways, all unique to the characters of the people who made their presentations. And something about the instruction, a koan that was important to you or inspiring to you, or your favorite koan or story, or this morning, Alan read that amazing poem by Li Bo. It seems to have pulled out the great heart that each one of us brings to this practice. And for every one of us, it's different, it's unique, and it's also the same. Something underneath all of the layers and layers of personality, all of the explanations that we give to ourselves about why we are the way we are and who we think we are and our history, all of that dissolves in practice. And I was questioning my choice of the koan that I'm about to read after dinner. I thought, oh no, I don't want to read this koan. I better quickly find something else, which has been a story we've heard from a few people. And then talking to David, we always check in with each other about how the day is going. I realized deep down inside my belly that this was the koan I wanted to talk about, but I don't really know what I'll say about it. And sitting here with all of you as we all came into this room, as I came in and saw so many of you here and then people kept entering, I realized that I was inspired just by our Sangha being here. Every single person in this room tonight and all the people who have been coming and going and coming and going have contributed to deepening my own understanding of Zen. And I'm grateful. I'm so grateful. This Sangha treasure, this koan treasure, this Dharma treasure, this Buddha treasure. And then when Diane had us read the text from Okamura about those who greatly realize delusion are Buddhas, I couldn't help but feel that I'd chosen well. So see if you can follow me now that I get into the song itself. This koan is from the record of Transmitting the Light. The 38th ancestor was Great Master Dongshan Wuben, or Dongshan Liangjie. He visited Yunyan and asked, "Who can hear the non-sentient preach the Dharma?" Yunyan answered, "The non-sentient can hear the non-sentient preach the Dharma." Dongshan asked, "Did you hear it?" Yunyan replied, "If I could hear it, you would not be able to hear me preach the Dharma." The master said, "In that case, I do not hear you preach the Dharma." And in another translation, "I don't want to hear you preach the Dharma." Yunyan said, "If you still don't hear me preach the Dharma, how much less can you hear the non-sentient preach the Dharma?" And the master was greatly awakened at this point, and he spoke this verse. "The preaching of the Dharma by the non-sentient is miraculous. If you try to hear with your ears, it's hard to understand. When you listen with your eye, then you know it." And Yunyan approved. So as with many of these koans, we hear the very end of the story. We don't hear the long wind-up. We don't hear everything that allowed these characters to come to this tipping point. Somehow or other, what the Zen gossip was all about the tipping point, about hearing. Did you hear what happened to Dongshan when he met with Yunyan? What was going on there? And this makes it a koan. What are they talking about? What are these preachings of the non-sentient? What's this dialogue all about? And the long wind-up to this story is that Dongshan was one of those students who yearned to know the truth about his life. He became famous as the founder, one of the founders of the Cao Dong school, or the Soto school. So he's our direct ancestor, a direct ancestor of Ehe Dogen, and a direct ancestor of all of us here in this room through the Soto school lineage that is part of our Boundless Way lineage tradition. When he was very, very young, he had many questions, and he went to many teachers, and teachers directed him to other teachers. And he would ask the same questions over and over and over again, and one of his questions was about hearing the teachings of non-sentient beings, that is, beings who don't sense, like rocks and floors. And he would always ask after he got the same answer again and again, the same answer that he gets in this koan, non-sentient beings hear the preaching of non-sentient beings. And then he would always ask, "Well, what sutra is that from?" And the different teachers would tell him different sutras and quote things. And the question had lodged in his mind because he'd heard another dialogue from a number of generations before he was born, a dialogue with the national teacher. And in one of his, he went to Guishan at one point, another teacher of the time, who was the last teacher who directed him to this one, Yunyan. And he said, "You know, I've heard this teaching about the preaching of the non-sentient beings." And Guishan did what we do in Boundless Way Zen. He said, "Do you know the story? Can you tell me the story? Can you quote the koan, in other words?" And Dongshan did. He quoted the koan. And it's probably a little bit helpful to hear what was in his mind. And in fact, what Guishan actually said was, "Do you remember it?" And Dongshan said, "Yes, I remember." And Guishan said, "Well, then give it a try." Which is nice. Give it a try. Show up as yourself. This is something preoccupying you. Let me hear it in your own words. How do you hear this question? So the master told the story. The Dongshan told the story. He said, "A monk asked, what is the mind of the ancient Buddhas? And the national teacher said, fences, walls, roof tiles, and pebbles. The monk asked, aren't these all non-sentient? The national teacher said, they are. The monk asked, will you explain how they preach the Dharma? The national teacher said, they constantly preach, vigorously, without ceasing. The monk asked, why can't I hear it? And the national teacher replied, you don't hear it, but that doesn't stop others from hearing it. And actually, this dialogue goes on so long, I think I'm just going to stop there. It's another page of the two of them going after each other. But the thing that lodged in Dangshan's mind was what Guishan did at the end, when finally he said to Dangshan, so how do you understand this? And Dangshan still was stuck. He said, I don't get it. I don't get how walls and pebbles and tiles can preach the Dharma. And so Guishan held up his whisk, brush-like thing that Zen teachers have. We don't carry them much in Boundless Way, but sometimes for ceremonies we do. He held up his whisk, and Dangshan still didn't get it, so Guishan sent him to this other teacher, Yunyan, who he finally has an awakening with. And this whole matter of hearing the teachings of the insentient, who preach ceaselessly, never stop preaching. This is something for me that's at the heart of practice. We love to think our way through life. It's the way we're wired. And we fall in love with our thinking. And thinking's not a bad thing, as you've heard us say over and over and over again. In fact, it's a miracle in itself that human beings can construct meaning internally without anything on the outside contributing to it. Just this endless circling around of thinking that feeds on itself. And of course, this is what Okamura was talking to us about in what we read tonight, how we don't see reality. We don't see reality. We only see the way we think about reality. We don't experience the world itself, but only the way we think about the world. Some of you know James Ford's wonderful story that he tells in his book, If You're Lucky, Your Heart Will Break, about his cabbage leaf experience, seeing a cabbage leaf in a bowl of soup, and then suddenly really seeing the cabbage leaf. My own experience, one of my experiences of this, didn't have anything to do with the cabbage leaf, but was something that happened late one night when I was sitting up alone in the Zendo years ago, and we used to sit facing the wall, which is a venerable Soto tradition that we don't do here in Boundless Way. But we didn't have walls in this particular Zendo, so someone had lovingly made screens, so everyone had screens set up in front of them, and we sat facing the screen. And I remember this moment, kind of like that cabbage leaf, where I saw the screen, and of course I knew it was a screen, and my mind was saying, look at the screen. And then suddenly, there was just the screen. There was just the whiteness of it and the weaving of the fabric, and everything had dropped away. And the screen became my teacher. And I was astonished. It was so simple. It had been in front of me the whole time. But because I had been in love with my thinking, I had never seen it before. And I remember a time when I was with my first teacher before the screen incident. And I was trying to understand how to practice Zen. And, you know, just like Dangshan, and really this spirit of wanting to know, never getting to the bottom, I admire it so much. And so many of you, you never let it go. One student said recently in a meeting we were having that he was like a dog with a bone, and I think I've said the same thing about myself. And this is an admirable quality in Zen students. This is not just about, oh, well, I've come to understand Dogen's teaching that we're already enlightened, and enlightenment is practice, and so I'm just going to sit here and screw it. It's not like that. That's, you know, one choice, but of course that attitude is still an example of the awakened nature manifesting itself. But when we're in that particular foggy place, we can't really know it. And all of you know, I think everyone in this room and probably everyone listening to this talk has had these moments where you actually saw the cabbage leaf, where you actually saw the screen. They're not moments where some other reality enters, but they're moments when reality manifests itself. The reality that's been here the whole time, but that we haven't seen. As a few of us have quoted from Wu Min, because it's so very clear, it takes a long time to realize. In fact, in my experience and in the experience of everyone I know who is a sincere person of the way, it takes until our last breath. There is no end to awakening. It moves forward, it carries us along with it, whether we know it or not, and every once in a while we get lucky and we open to it. The clouds part, our hearts break, whatever metaphor you want to use, and we see and hear the teachings of the insentient. So this time when I was with my first teacher and I was begging him to give me the secret answer, how do I do it? How do I practice? And right outside of the Doksan room, a morning dove called. And you know maybe the sound of the morning dove, that ooh, ooh, ooh. And I wanted to keep on talking, and he put up his hand and he said, do you hear that? And I have to say that I didn't. So we sat there for a little while. And then the morning dove called again. And he looked at me and he said, did you hear that? And because I've always been known for my honesty, even though when it's gotten me in a lot of trouble, I said, nope, I don't really hear it. And then, of course, from then on, every time I went anywhere, I heard morning doves. And I yearned to know what that teacher was talking about. But I didn't, until I did. Because I couldn't get to it through my conceptual mind. I couldn't hear the sound of the morning dove. Because in my mind was, I need to hear the sound of the morning dove. I need to be different. I need to be some other person. I need to be someone with different ears, different sensory apparatus. The sensory apparatus of enlightenment, or my deluded take on enlightenment. And we all have them. Even when we've had awakening experiences, we persist in thinking, oh, that's done, or oh, that wasn't it, or something else. Something that the mind just wants to take hold of in its own jaws and shake around like a dog with a bone. And we cling to it because we're so convinced. But the thing itself is patiently waiting for us. As the national teacher says, it's fences, walls, roof tiles, and pebbles. And you can hear that and you can go, uh-huh, yep, okay, I better pay more attention to the fences and the walls and the roof tiles and the pebbles. I better pay more attention to the sound of the bird. I better do this. I better get this. And there's the mind throwing up its artificial barriers. This is one of the reasons that Wu Min called his collection the barrier that is no barrier. The gate that is no gate. Because it's right here the whole time. It's never been anywhere else. You can't go looking for it. But as Dogen encourages us, we can receive it. We can learn how to be a receiving apparatus, a welcomer, an appreciator. I'm so, I love that phrase that Steve brought to us that I repeated a number of times, appreciating the wound. It's just the way physicians talk about examining every aspect of it. Not appreciating it and, oh, fantastic, the wound, because that would be some other thing. That's not our Zen practice. Our practice is to simplify, to let things drop away of themselves through this simplicity of simply being still, present and awake to the best of our ability, but not a kind of striving ability, but the native ability that we were born with, our true nature, which manifests itself unceasingly. And sentient beings preach the Dharma unceasingly, tirelessly. We human beings get tired. We can only point to it until somehow or other it's revealed. We can only wait for it until somehow or other it pierces our hearts. This is the promise of this practice. This is the promise of the teachings of insentient beings. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Everybody knows how that works.
Nature of my hip joint and how it was calling out to me in pain. And there it was. It was coming forth to me.
I'm happy you said that, because that was one of the many themes that this was about, a 1% of the talk that I had in my mind that I was going to give. But that was one of the things, that this is the body calls out to us. The teachings are relentless in that way. And right? And of course,
and it goes on forever and ever as you're sitting there. Will it ever, will this pain ever end?
Yeah, and there's the mind, right, coming in and not allowing you to really be intimate with it. That's just what happens all the time. And so we have to also appreciate the mind, the barrier that comes in the way. Just pain by itself is very different from, is it ever going to go away, and this is terrible, and this means that, and why did I do this, and blah, 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 blah. Just, ouch. Or grunt.
That's what it does. And I think by recognizing the pain and inform yourself, it's delusion. The pain release the body.
And so the traditional response of the Zen masters to that would be to hit you over the head.
Right. I'm really trying to hold back here. So, thank you, Dave. I wanted to say, come up here.
Thank you.
We don't do that anymore because of insurance reasons, so don't worry. At least not physically.
And also, I was struck by your talking about the Gateless Gate, you know, the title of the collection, and this particular koan being talking about, you know, like the gates are everywhere, you know, and our vow is to, you know, gates are boundless and I vow to enter them. And mm-hmm. and here they appear, you know, in the pain in your hip, in the thoughts in your mind, in the sound of the birds and the ducks mm-hmm. that were swimming mm-hmm. in the stream. They went by them, I said, how are you? And they went, quack, 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 quack. So, just gates everywhere, you know? It's all gates, yeah. So,
mm. I know that you know, Dharma gates are boundless. Some, we know, we talk about it sometimes, and people say, oh, it's so depressing. How am I ever going to get through them all? And I tend to more see it from Yuri. Well, if they're boundless, that means wherever I am.
Right.
It's
right.
Got to be here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No problem.
Quack, quack, quack.
Seems that, of course, the cushion I'm sitting on, this Sarvatthana liturgy book, have, this is the thought that why would they have anything to distract them from preaching the Dharma ceaselessly? And in some ways, I don't know how to describe this, but if I am quiet, I can enter into an intimacy with something insentient that I find very elusive in entering into with another person. It's almost as if it's more difficult.
Well, thank you. This was one of the parts of the talk also that I didn't give, which is the point of the koan, which I'm not going to give away, but it isn't about the teachings of insentient beings at all. It's about making distinctions between sentient and non-sentient beings, right?
This fusion. It is a fusion that it isn't even worth using the word fusion. Just forget it.
Thank you. Gone. But this is, you know, we do tend to make categories. We favor some things over others. And it's important to know that if the gates really are boundless, that means they're found in the person sitting right in front of you.
Of course.
Yeah. So, sentient, non-sentient.
And I think, too, the all kinds of, I love what you said, the complications arise. We get distracted. And, of course, every one of us is none other than preaching the Dharma ceaselessly. While we go around trying to solve our problems and am I good enough and... And with other people, sometimes, as you point out, we have quite strong stories about who am I, who are they. And I think this may be one many of us when we go out in nature. Mm. You know, you walk in the woods and something, you know, we can feel the beauty of the trees or the flowers or the snow. Because we aren't quite as distracted sometimes by these great stories about other people.
And if I may say, even that idea that it's possible to be distracted from ceaselessly preaching the Dharma mm-hmm. in a way is,
right.
I mean, it has its place.
Right.
And also,
right.
what place is that?
Right.
Thank you. Steve?
So, the whole world around us
us is as you say, constantly preaching this this Dharma, and I just find it fascinating how obsessed I am with the goings on in my mind, even, you know, even knowing this for myself, you know, the truth of what you're saying, it doesn't keep me from believing that I'm going to figure my way out of whatever my current dilemma is. And I, you know, I try and get myself to stop, and it works for a few seconds, and then I'm sucked right back into it again, you know, I'm just whirling away for minutes or hours at a time, and it's so hard to even realize I'm doing it, first of all. You know, you would think that sitting here in the Zendo with the intention to pay attention to, you know, things besides, not, you know, to exclude the thinking, but to pay attention to things other than my thinking, you would think that would actually happen. But I sometimes go for, you know, maybe for hours, and it doesn't occur to me that I'm sitting here trying to figure stuff out, you know, and then suddenly I realize, and it's so sticky, this idea that, you know, we can figure things.
It's such a profound habit, you know, and it's so useful. That's the thing. If it wasn't useful, well, we wouldn't have done it to begin with. But you know, it's really the capacity to conceptualize things is really great. What a fantastic thing that is. But you know, you're pointing to a couple of important themes in learning how to practice, which never ends, as we know, because you know, practice is finding out what practice is. Right? There's no end point. So tussling with this is so important. These thoughts are also, just like Ed's hip pain, the teachings of insentient beings, that they're completely in themselves manifestations of the Buddha. They're not. We don't need to separate them either. But the stickiness that you point to, that's where we start to believe in our thoughts as the descriptors of the world. And they're just thoughts. they're only, you know, pictures and words and strung together to make meaning. And that's all. We're not in the business of stopping them, as you know really well. But we're also, you know, when we catch ourselves believing in them, we have to appreciate that belief and go, wow, look at me doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Again and again and again, as it says in another text. Yeah, this is just never ending. And phew, and just seeing it begins to shift it. That's the amazing thing. It's not, you know, pound it in the ground, and it's not chop it off and throw it away. It's thinking is happening. How do you think not thinking, Dogen asks.
I don't know, but I know one thing that seems to work. Well, I shouldn't say work.
Everybody's suddenly worked up. What is it? What works?
Something that I practice with is like, I notice myself really wanting things to be otherwise, and I just sit there and I go, you know, I really want things to be otherwise. I really, really want things to be otherwise. I really want things to be otherwise. And it kind of, you know, it shifts in that seeing it or something, you know, and then I get bored with it. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. That's it right there. Yeah. I've told this story before, but I did a sesshin once where I decided to become really curious about my thoughts, and they all had the same form. They all began, they were words and pictures, and they all began with, I want. After a while, I realized I didn't actually need to finish those sentences.
Right.
And I just, you know, I want, I want, I want, I want. Yeah. So just seeing the structure of them, seeing the form of them, that is liberating. And again, you don't know this till you know it. You can't think your way into the teachings of insentient beings, the awakened heart-mind, which is here all the time, but, you know.
So somebody uses the image of a bag that we carry around that's so precious, and we're told we should put it down, but we just can't. It's just, you know, I'm not sure I'll survive. And then when you open it up and you see the dead rat and the t-shirt you've worn for 4 years, and there's no effort in putting it down. You don't have to work hard to do it. But until we see what's there,
right,
that can't put it down.
You mentioned that experience with the scream, and I was thinking of that experience I had with a wooden fence. I was really bummed out that I was going to meditate in front of a wooden fence, and it ended up being like that happened suddenly.
Right.
And it seems like such a tease to me, those experiences, because then they're just, like almost immediately for me, they're just gone, and then I keep wanting to look for them again.
Yeah.
And then the pain thing was interesting that you brought up, because I struggle with that a lot too. If there's tension, how do you become intimate with that?
Yeah.
So you want to get away from it.
Yeah, exactly. The thing about them being a tease is a really interesting view of the mind too. But they are. They're like little intimations. And the problem is that the mind rushes in and says, all right, let me look for another fence. Right, and what's next down the road is completely unexpected. You can't predict it. This practice is it's very, very simple, and it's really, really hard.
I decide when it's over.
We're taking turns being the teacher of the day, and I was just about to make it be over, but then I realized.
I think it's over.
Thank you.